Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention.
Okay, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A. And today is Thursday, August 11, 2016, we're having a special morning show because I have some obligations today that I have to take care of, and I won't be able to do it at our regular scheduled time. So this is a pre-recorded show here on Thursday early in the morning, early afternoon. So there will be no calls. You won't be able to call in to the show today, but you definitely can enjoy, sit back, listen, and enjoy the show, and then we will pick this conversation up a little bit later. Also, tomorrow, Friday, we will not have a Tando Radio Show because of a pre-scheduled event that I have to take care of, an appointment, so I won't be able to have a show, and I doubt that I'll be able to record one, but maybe I will. So let's jump into today's show. But before we do that, let's take care of the first business at hand. The first business at hand is always taking care of Black Talk Radio Network and all the programs that are brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. And you can do that by going to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/crowdfunding digital black media. And there you'll see the crowdfunding campaign in order to keep Black Talk Radio Network on the air, so that you can continue to receive from all of the programs and the network itself. Very, very important that we give some of our financial energy to the network so that it will be here for us and for the generation that we have yet not named. So unless some of you are forward thinking and you've already started to name some of your children. So with that being said, let's definitely support this network and the good works that it's doing. It's one of the few networks that has actually has been put together for your demographic, for you, your family, and our community. Now, also, we are no longer on Facebook. I no longer post on Facebook any stories or anything else. Where we're going now is that we go to BTR, that's Black Talk Radio Community. And you can find that also on the www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we have a new community page where it is a Facebook-like place where we can post different things outside of what I call Fedbook. And it is just our community. So I will be posting there. If I post anything inside of Tando Radio Show on Facebook, it's just going to be what the show is going to be about, you know, for maybe next week, and then after that, completely off of it. I just feel better going somewhere else, because, you know, it's just something that we need to do. And it's not really about convenience. It's really about the importance of it all. Facebook was not designed by us, so I have I don't have a lot of faith and confidence in the overall information or the administrators of that medium. So, and plus, we need to really support our own medium, and it is going to continue to grow and do well. So we would ask that you support it. If you are listening, if you're a listener, regular listener of Black Talk Radio Network, Tando Radio Show, and all the other programs that are here, this is a place where you could definitely follow and post and respond to some of the things that we're going to be doing in the future. So I'm not going to be posting in Facebook, probably just one thing talking about where the show is, what's going to be on the show for 1 week, and then I'm not going to do it anymore. Just go straight to Black Talk Radio Network community. And that is, you can actually find that by going to www.community.blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's where you can find where all the postings will be. I'm going to say it again for those of you. It's www.community.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Once again, that's www.community.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And that's where you'll be able to find the BTR community, Black Talk Radio. That stands for Black Talk Radio Community. So with that being said, let's jump into how we can support Black Talk Radio Network. Everyone, there's a crowdfunding campaign. You can do it right there on the website. And there are three ways in which you can donate. You can do you can donate right there on the website, or you can actually give some of your financial energy to the network by going, by actually, option number one would be where you're making a one-time contribution of $24.99 or less via PayPal, or by sending a check or money order, and make that money order payable to, that check and that money order payable to, Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. Once again, you can make the check or money order payable to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. And for that option one, you will, for that first option of $24.99 or less, all donations and contributions are extremely appreciated. You will receive the monthly email reports. Excuse me. You will receive the monthly statistical performance report, and you will also receive the social media operations via email. So make sure you leave a good email. This is very, very important that we do this. Let's start supporting. Let's ensure that Black Talk Radio Network and all of the programs that are brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network are going to be here. Option number two, you can make a, just for one penny more, you can make a one-time contribution of $25 or more. In addition to receiving the monthly email reports, you will receive a free Black Radio Station Matters t-shirt as an appreciation gift. If you would like to receive more than one t-shirt, and all the t-shirts will be given in intervals of $25 per contribution. So if you like two t-shirts, that would be $50, $375, $400, $100. And with that, make sure that you put a corresponding size with each t-shirt that you should be, that you will be receiving, and make sure you have a good email address so that you can be contacted, and a shipping address, a good shipping address, and for, so that your t-shirts will get to you in a timely manner. Option number three, become a monthly contributor of $25 or more. In addition to receiving the monthly email reports, you will receive your Black Radio Station Matters t-shirt and be eligible from gifts from the network from time to time. So this is how you can support Black Talk Radio Network. Everyone, please, let's continue with this. And because as things start to move along globally, regionally, nationally, statewide, in your community-wise, you need to know what's happening. And not only that, a place where you can start to formalize your own response to different things. It's very critical. It doesn't take much. $1, $2, $3, you know, $5, $10 for those within your means. But I would say, if you've been enjoying Black Talk Radio Network, please don't just eat the fruit. It's time that we feed the roots. It's just like you. You want people to invest in you. You want people that you've actually been assisting and helping that you would actually ask and desire that they actually support you and somehow from what you're giving. And this is very, very important that we do that. So make sure that we're supporting Black Talk Radio Network. Now, let's get into what's in the news, okay? So now, let's jump into what's in the news. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up a couple of stories from what's in the news that I didn't pick up on yesterday because we weren't on yesterday on the 10th. So here we go. All right. Some of the things that are what is in the news, and I go to what we posted in BTR community. So here we go as to what's in the news. But before I do that, everyone, you know, this is a great opportunity that we have with Black Talk Radio community. So there is go to the front page. There's a for $24 you're making a one-time contribution of $24 for the whole year. You have access to all of that. This is where we give the access from. You know, where we'll be posting different things from Tando Radio Show and all of the programs that are on the network. So it is definitely worth it. It's something that we should be doing, especially as time starts to deteriorate. Okay, now check this out. So here we go. What's in the news? First article comes from FortRussia.com. China openly offers Russia an alliance against NATO. China and Russia, and if you know anything about China and Russia, they have been basically enemies for a very, very long time. But they're coming together because of the overall geopolitical, economical, social, and trade paradigm shift that's going on globally, and it's shifting from the West to the East. Now, what they're having is that China and Russia are having trade agreements, treaties, alliances, and also military agreements, trade treaties, alliances, and coming together and fighting NATO, which is basically the U.S. But NATO, in my opinion, is going to start to actually unravel, and some of the NATO nations are going to, in my opinion, run to the BRIC nations that are headed by Russia and China. Now, the thing about this, the dynamics of this is that these two countries actually have had border skirmishes between themselves, as well as India and China are basically arch enemies themselves, have actually, on their borders, have actually been fighting. But they have come together to form BRICS and all the other over 125 countries that make up the whole consortium of BRICS. Is not just Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, but they are the headlining ones because they are the ones with the resources and the assets. So China is now, and Russia are now in alliance. Because why is this alliance necessary? Because there's going to be a trade war that has already happened, a economic war that's already happened and is already engaged, and is going to actually be a physical war by way of cyber attacks and by military confrontations. And this, in my opinion, will lead to World War III, that will lead to Global Nuclear War I. And believe me, they don't have to, they can use nuclear weapons without destroying the planet. That's the facade that they give you about nuclear weapons. You can just look, 1 year ago tomorrow is when the port in China, in my opinion, may have been hit by the rods of God or by a tactical nuke. And nuclear technology has been around as weaponry for a while. They give you the appearance that it has destroyed the planet, but the actual weapons that they use don't destroy the planet. Look at Japan in itself. When the U.S. had the largest terrorist act on the planet in modern times, when they dropped those two nuclear devices on Japan was not totally destroyed. Neither were the cities totally, completely obliterated the way that they make you think that it is. This is why this war will definitely happen. Next article. Tokyo vows firm response to Beijing for hundreds of ships in East China Sea. The South Sea of China is definitely going to explode, ladies and gentlemen. We posted a couple of things, and this is only getting worse. Next article comes from The Guardian. Trafficking of Nigerian women into prostitution in Europe at crisis level. Check out this article. And this one is still in on Facebook. And it's going to be there. I'm going to leave all the articles there, but we'll be exclusively posting in BTR community in the future. Next article from The Guardian. Only the Olympics, the only Olympic legacy I see is reparations and war, a year in the life of Rio Favelas. Now, let me tell you something about the Olympics. To me, the Olympics is a curse on a nation, and it's intentionally done to destroy that nation's economy. And this, and ladies and gentlemen, is by no secret, and it is definitely a plan to destroy Brazil because it is a part of the BRIC nations. And if you notice anything about the Olympics, look how many empty seats there are. And Brazil has to spend cash in order to get ready for the world to come to that. But this is one of the ways, the asymmetrical way that you destroy the people of a country. It is not just what they show you before. They always try to think that they're giving you something. These people, this agenda of subjugation and human enslavement never gives you anything. It only takes. And you're going to see the economy in Brazil to completely start to unravel after the Olympics. And they're going to say it was the part of it was the fault of the how much they lost in the Olympic Games itself. This is a design plan. This is what they usually do. And we need to know some of the telltale signs so that we don't fall for the old tricks just because we're new to the trick. Next article comes from Express.com. Make or break. Italy gives the green light to pivotal referendum, which could destroy the EU. Italian High Court has given a go-ahead to make or break referendum on a crisis-torn country constitution future, which could have a huge knockout blow for Europe. Ladies and gentlemen, the euro is falling apart. The European Union is falling apart. And this is all a part of the economic destruction that is going to precede the global war that you're going to see. Italy is going to leave BRICS. Excuse me, not BRICS, the EU, because of this banking crisis, and not only that, the overall economic displacement that is going on and going to happen is going to be great. And I want to ask you all something. I said this in Black Talk Radio community. I'm going to just say it now. Once these banks start to completely unfold, which they do, it's going to put a lot of unaware people in very compromising situations. They will not have any real leverage in order to respond, and they will not be in a position of advantage. Let me tell you how bad this is. If you notice, there aren't that many bank branches anymore. What you will see everywhere, you will see a large campaign by the major banks putting ATM drive-ups and ATMs everywhere. Why? Because once the banking holiday happens, they realize that the only thing that you're going to be going to and the only thing that's going to be available to you is going to be a computer screen that is going to say out of service. There won't even be a bank for you to go to. They're intentionally, in my opinion, cutting back on bank branches, and it shows where we are economically. And this is why you should don't be scared, never scared, always prepared. Very, very critical that you prepare for this thing because it is already here and unfolding. Next article comes from the New York Post. Rich people are bragging about their luxury panic rooms. The hottest new trend for the 1%ers, safe rooms, darling billionaires, are outfitting their abodes with ultra-luxurious safe spaces that cost up to $500,000, according to Town. And I don't know what the other one is that was posted out of the New York Post. Yes, this is something because a lot of these people understand what's going to be happening and what we're going up against. Next article. This one came. We talked about this one. This is a very, very critical one. It's from ibtimes.co.uk. Three Chicago street gangs formed deadly alliance to kill police in wake of Paul O'Neill's shooting. This is going to be a part of the agenda to bring in what's really happening. Next one. Article, Bloomberg. Saudi builds bus traps. Thousands in the desert nightmare. Saudi building. And what happened was this. This is my commentary. Here's what will happen to many Americans abroad once the U.S. dollar loses major trading power or purchasing power. From the military to regular folks working or visiting overseas, they will be stuck. This is what's happening. Saudi Arabia had all of these work camps, and they brought people from all over the world, which they've been doing for a very long time, bringing people from Sudan, bringing people from the Philippines, bringing people from all over to work in Saudi Arabia to build this infrastructure, to do some of the service labor, and to do some of the constructions and everything. And now these people are trapped in the desert because the Saudi Arabian economy is collapsing. This is going to be the trend, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a one-time thing that's happening here. You know, it's nothing unique about this. This has been done plenty of times before, and it's only going to grow. The U.S. military, in my opinion, is going to be stuck overseas, and they're not going to be able to get home. And people that are vacationing and not prepared for this, they're going to be stuck there. This is why you need to know, never scared, always prepared, because if you're prepared, then you will be able to have leverage and have options. Very, very important. Next article from Bloomberg, new banking rules won't stop bailouts. They're likely to have an unintended consequences, and many still leave government on the hook to bail out banks. This is from Bloomberg. Check this out. My man Kev sent that to me. Thanks, Kev, for sending that. Next article. This one comes from Bloomberg. Bill Gross admonishment supported by Illinois pension funds. This is a very critical article to read. Totally, and my commentary is that this is all totally unfunded. Is more like it. Hope people catch what Gross is warning them about. And what I'm talking about, the pension funds are totally unfunded. From California Caspers to all of the pension funds are actually exposed to unfunded liabilities. And this is what they're hiding from the general population, so you'll continue to do what you've done before. And believe me, they are going to pull the pin on the common person's economy. And this is one of the ways that you have to protect yourself. Next article. This one came from CBS News, and it says, former CIA deputy director, I want to scare Bashar Assad. I want the Syrian president Assad to think that this is not going to end well for me. And this is what this former deputy director of the CIA told Charlie Rose in discussion about the Syrian war. And he basically said he wants to scare the Russians, scare the Syrians and the Iranians, and basically attack them and kill them, is what he was basically alluding to in this whole thing. I think in this one he actually said it. And my commentary was, you punk. And I used some other choice words, but I didn't say them all the way, you know, just abbreviation. And I said, then suit up, then suit the hell up and go fight the Iranians, Syrians, and Russians head up. I'm sorry, but these kinds of people I personally hate. People who don't fight wars but declare them is foolish for the people that do fight wars. Time. If this dude wants to fight the Syrians, the Russians, and the Iranians, let him go do it head up by himself. We need to move away from these type of people, because this is the type of government control that leads to depopulation, and you're being the target. Okay, so next article. We said that today's show is going to be part two. Did EBEs, extraterrestrial biological entities, have a role in human development? Plus, a special word from our sister T is going to be coming up in a minute. 1 second, then we're going to get to that, and our sister T is going to have some poetry for us. And I'm going to tell you, this has had some dynamic poetry, And I can't wait. She's going to be doing this with us from time to time. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy it. So now let's go over to really quickly to BTR, Black Talk Radio Community, and check out what's there that we posted in the news. Okay, so now next article came from MarshTalk.com. Russia pulls out of the Ukraine. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, right now Russia is on the verge of, in my opinion, a preemptive strike against NATO and the Ukraine because of what's going on now. We are really, really close to military confrontation. Check out that one. Next article comes from Surrend.com. Pentagon doesn't know where $6.5 trillion went. Remember in 9/11 and 2001, same thing that they said? Amazing. Nothing new here. Next article. Ukrainian president orders troops to on the highest level in the Ukraine. And that's because this overall war in the Baltic, because NATO is actually trying to encompass and surround Russia by military means, is going to come to a head. Next article. I posted this one again from Mirror.com. Fears grow. Russia is using the Ukraine battlefield to rehearse for war with the West. Definitely can see that. So check out that article. Next article. This one came from Breitbart. Don't like that place, but hey. Philippines president talking about a U.S. ambassador. He says he's annoying, homosexual, and is a son of a bee. So check out that article. He really, really, he says, man, he went in on this dude. But check this out. And I said that this is going to be a part of how you're going to see the Philippines move away from the U.S. because they're broke. The president of the Philippines says, you know what? U.S. don't have no money. It's the Chinese. We better be going with them. And you're seeing that that is going to actually play out, even with the overall tussle in the South Sea of China. But I think that that is actually just a strategical plan to get in. Next article before we go to the commercial break. Beijing installed supersonic missiles in the South Sea of China on their most lethal destroyer. This now supersonic missile is the one that could actually sink aircraft carriers, and the aircraft carriers that they would be sinking or engaging would be the U.S. ones. This South Sea of China, the Baltic states, Venezuela, South America, Djibouti, the Middle East, Turkey, and throughout the Middle East area, the Baltic states, as I said before, and the Arctic Circle is going to be the overall linchpin for the global war that we're going to see. Okay, everyone, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. When we come out of a commercial break, we're going to hear from Sister T, who's going to read us some poetry. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. And like I said, this is a special broadcast today. We won't be taking any phone calls today, but we will definitely be back on Monday on our regular scheduled time, and we will be taking phone calls from there. So we're going to go to a commercial break, then we're going to come back with some poetry and jump into today's show. You're listening to Tando Radio Show. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A., coming to you live from FEMA Region Number 5. And we have a live show. Today is August the 11th, 2016. It is a Thursday. Today's show is a special broadcast. We're doing this very early, not at our regular schedule time, so you won't be able to call in to the show, but we will have discussions about this show later on. But we have in queue waiting for us. One of the things that I want to start doing is that we're going to have this sister, Sister T, is going to be coming on Black Talk, Tando Radio Show from time to time and read some of her poetry. This sister has some great, great poetry. She's a great, great spirit, and I know that I enjoy some of her poetry, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to hear some of it so that you can enjoy it as well. Sister T, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, guys, this is Sister T. I got this poem for you guys, and I hope that you enjoy it. Hey, Becca.
Yes, looking forward to it. Let's do it. Go ahead, Sister T.
All right. Hey, Black girl, questions for my sister. Why when your hair gets wet, it starts getting kinky? Hey, Black girl, why when you talk, you gotta use your body? Hey, Black girl, why when you walk, do you demand respect? Hey, Black girl, why when you hear the beat, you hip-hop and get the grooving? Hey, Black girl, why when the white man's talking, you stare off? Are you listening? Hey, Black girl, why when your feet are tired, you keep walking? Hey, Black girl, why when they say you move, when you have nothing but an attitude, you keep talking? Hey, Black girl, why when the sun hits you, your body starts glowing? Hey, Black girl, why when they try to break you, you keep growing? Hey, Black girl, questions for my sister. I've been thinking about it.
Wow. See, this is why I wanted Sister T to come in from time to time and read some of her poetry. Hey, Black girl.
Thank you.
Powerful,
thank you.
Powerful. Now, Sister T, you're going to be coming back, yes, and reading some more poetry for us from time to time. I know you were a little nervous, but you did fantastic, as I knew that you would. So this is something that you're going to be doing a little more often with us, right?
Yes, 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 it is, and thank you so much for this opportunity. Yes, I was a little nervous, but these nerves, they're going to go away. They're going to go away.
Yes, you did a fantastic job. Hey, Black girl. Beautiful, beautiful, from a beautiful energy, from a beautiful spirit that has energy that's eternal. So, sisters, don't stop writing, because it is who you really are, and we look forward to you bringing some of your poetry to us, and inspires others to actually bring out some of their individual unique talents. That's your money. That's your intrinsic value. So we appreciate and thank you so much, Sister T.
Thank you so much, Brother Dave.
All right, we'll talk. We'll talk a little bit later. Great job, okay?
All right, thank you.
Okay, peace, Sister. Peace. Much love, much respect. Man, Sister T, this is, let me tell you, this sister has some poetry that is just will blow your mind. So now you see why I really wanted to bring her on to introduce you to some of the poetry that she has. Hey, Black girl, that was a phenomenal one, and that was the kickoff, the inaugural, the initial reading of poetry by Sister T. And this is something that I think is very, very important. So now we're going to jump into today's show. And today's show, we're going to carry this over from last week's show. I had to change some things up because I have some things that I have to do, some obligations that I have to make, and there's some appointments and some meetings that I have to do. So I had to change this up. I'm going to try to get, maybe we'll do a show, I'm not quite sure, with Brother Bragg tomorrow. But I wanted to finish up on Tuesday's show from what we brought to you about extraterrestrial biological entities having a place in human development here on Earth. This is just some opinions of some people. You heard some people weigh in. A lot of people called in. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to pick back up where that was. This is actually going to be talking about a specific group of EBEs, and EBEs is extraterrestrial biological entities. is what they're known as. And yes, I do think that the universe, the galaxy, our solar system, even our solar system, I believe that is teeming with all forms of living biological entities that's just way beyond just us. And I do believe that they have a culture and a way of life and have had some, they may be relatively new or they may be ancient and so forth and so on. But I do definitely see that the evidence is pointing that they are there and they are right in the midst of where we are. If we would only just look beyond the lies and the deceptions that we've been taught by man, and if we would start to resonate with what we were given to by the great creator God Almighty, the spirit that we have, we'll see them. One of the things is that I don't really rely on my physical eyes. I rely more on my spiritual eyes, and there's so much more you can see. If you've never seen them, it's maybe because you're looking in the wrong direction or looking through the wrong spectacles of light, not your eyes, but your spirit. So we have this one guy. I don't agree with everything. This is just, I just wanted to give you some take on what some of the historical evidence has been and what some of the actual investigations that people have indulged in their lives to see what is going on in our universe. And I think it's very important that we do that so that we don't just have one story, and that's the lying story of the institutions that want to continue to subjugate and enslave us all. So this guy named Gerald Clark was talking about the genealogy of the Anunnaki. And this is going to be a start. We're going to, from time to time, we're going to pick up different ones and bring you different ideas and different things that you can investigate and develop your own opinion and develop your own resonance. How you actually look at different things. You can develop your own investigations and outlook, and you can resonate. Your own resonating spirit, your own resonating energy, but what's going on in the universe, because the world is much bigger than the block we grew up on and is much bigger than the planet, the living planet that we reside on, in my opinion. So let's pick up where we were. We started here. I'm going to pick up where we were, and then we will continue. So just give me a second here, and I will...
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very
much. Oops, messed up. Okay, here we go. Let me cue this right. There we go. Okay, here we go.
Fiction. I'm thinking of those in Peru or somewhere out there. They had those ginormous, like, landing pads and very big, sculptures of different animals and stuff like that. Was that done by the Anunnaki? Like, was that to give them an idea from space?
There we go.
And she was very important, because if if one of them had a child with her, it would be in line to rule because of this half-sister mitochondrial DNA thing. So she was kind of a key player for that reason as well. Okay. So... they end up casting lots. Enki gets Africa. Anu goes back to Nibiru. Enlil gets Mesopotamia. And the exemption is that the temple of Eridu and the city that Enki built there with his original Igigi watchers still belong to him. And apparently he had a garden there, and he'd done all kinds of things in 5,000 years until his brother showed up. At this point, they've divided the territory. I left Inanna out. She got the Indus Valley. Okay, then Enki's in Africa. Oh, and the medical officer actually got some territory, even though she was a medical officer. She got given the Bond Heaven Earth region up in the Sinai Peninsula that belonged to the Anunnaki. Now, this was the area where they had their, I guess you would call it, their communication facilities.
Okay.
And also transport facilities for moving the ore back to Nibiru, whether it went directly or via a way station.
I'm thinking of those... In Peru or somewhere out there, they had those ginormous, like, landing pads and very big, you know, kind of, I guess, sculptures of different animals and stuff like that. Was that done by the Anunnaki? Like, was that to give them an idea from space?
It very well could have. There have been several races, I believe, that have visited the Earth and done prospecting here. And
okay.
I think there have been somewhat controversies between races of vying for those you know, resources from the Earth. So, you know, resource wars and genetic wars, both. Excuse me. Okay, so let's go back to Africa. We've now got the main players. They've divided the territories. And these Ajiji watchers are signed up to come down to Africa and mine the gold manually versus this colloidal method they were originally planning to do from the ocean. Well, this is hard work. And they were understaffed. And it says they worked for an entire shahr, which is 3,600 years. Before they finally revolted, being led by one of their fellow gods, which they referred to as Allah. Gee, where have we heard that name before?
Yeah.
Well, so he has an AKA list, just like many of these other ones do, and when you find out who they are, I think it'll make a lot more sense to what's going on in the world. Understand that Enki was a scientist. He probably wasn't a great organizational guy. He was more of a creator. And Enlil was more of a bureaucratic type commander. So, you know, he was kind of an in-charge kind of guy. Well, these workers weren't getting the gold fast enough, and Enlil ended up going down to Africa and had a fortress there right outside of these mines that are down in South Africa, okay? Some people have written books about these structures that have been found in South Africa that are described by the Sumerians. And we have gold mines that have been found down there and purchased by the Anglo-American Mining Corporation that date back thousands of years, actually hundreds of thousands of years. So all of a sudden, there raises a flag right there. The Sumerian documents say somebody was in South Africa mining gold 100,000 or more years ago. And now we have the mines from the Anglo-American Mining Corporation that were verified by archaeologists to be at this same time frame. So you have to ask yourself, who was mining gold 100,000 plus years ago in Africa? Okay, there's correlation number one. Okay, this really happened.
Okay, I wanted to stop it really quick there to give my... Now, in my research of the precious metal, this is how I actually came upon the Anunnaki. And the overall story of Enki and Enlil, and it started with me from my overall investigation of the precious metals. And this is why you've heard me say that before, that the precious metals actually has started slavery and is one of the only things that's going to stop it. Because of it originally started slavery, as you'll start to see, slavery was started because of assets. The controlling and hoarding of assets to control someone else. And until, you've heard me say this before on Sando Radio Show, until you control assets that have intrinsical value, when you don't control it, someone else will. And the one that does control it, and when you need it, they will enslave you. And they will enslave you to get it for them, for their benefit, at your while you're being exploited. Okay? So this is part of, and I've done my research with this, and this is how I was like, okay, now who's these animals? And all of it starts to come together. And if you notice that one of the, from this story of the Sumerians, that one of the key players, one of the Anunnaki, was named after a religion. And these were all of the, it started to form the different forms of religion that we have here. One of the key individuals' names was Allah. Okay? And this was once the Gijis decided to revolt because mining, let me tell you something about mining the precious metal. It's difficult, tedious, laborious work. And why is it? Because It's so deep in the ground, from when it strikes the earth, it goes deep. The earth doesn't produce it. So very, very important. I just wanted to give you that heads up, and then we'll go back to it now. Let's go ahead.
Okay, so apparently this rebel leader, Allah, riled them up, told them to burn their tools. They surrounded Enlil's house, told him they wanted relief, and this led to the next big event in the human milestone, which was our creation account. You with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so a council meeting was called when these rebels surrounded Enlil's house. He called his father Anu and a few of the other council members from the Sononaki Council to decide what to do about this. He volunteered to kill one, and Anu and Enki said no, they deserve relief. Well, this led to them discussing tools versus meat. Okay, are we going to use biological entities to continue this operation, or are we going to use advanced tools? Well, for some reason, they didn't choose tools, and I talk about this in my second book, why they probably did that. But they did dispatch Enki and his half-sister, Ninma, who was, like I said, Isis in Egypt, to go off and do a genetic experiment with the life forms that they found on this earth. They described that in the Atrahasis tablets. Like I said, this isn't from Sitchin, and I'm definitely not a Sitchin basher, but he pointed us to this document, okay? So it's very important. So they did their experiments, finally came up with a worker that could replace the Ajiji miners. And at that point, they couldn't procreate. So the next character comes in, who was Enki's other son, and his name was Ningxida. And at this point in the story, it's probably good to talk about symbols, but we'll talk about their symbols right about the time they leave Africa and go up to Enki's city, Eridu, in the Garden of Eden. Okay, so at this point, they can't procreate, and they've been producing them via in vitro fertilization and not meeting the labor demands fast enough. Okay, and the medical officers involved and some of the other...
Okay, I want to stop it real quick because there was some major significant stuff that was left out. So the Gigi starts to rebel, and there's mutiny. So Anul calls his brother Enki and calls for his Enlil calls Anul, Enki and Enlil, some people call Anul, and then they call for their father from their planet. And the planet that they're coming from has been commonly known and referred to in the Bible as Wormwood, or as the destroyer, and commonly classified as Nibiru, okay? In today's how they classify it now, okay? So now, in this rebellion, where this one individual, Allah, he charges all of them, and he charges on Anul's house. And Anul was known to be a tyrannous leader. And they call them, when I say they call them gods, because they were from a different planet, and that's what Anunnaki means, from those from the heaven that came. And so, and I'm talking about a little god. They basically was just like a major celebrity figurehead here on Earth, or a major political leader, or a king, or something. You've seen how people worship other people throughout this planet, so this is all nothing new. If you start to look at it, you can see even within the culture that we have now, you can see how this could be, and you could see where people keep saying that Elvis isn't dead and Pac isn't dead and all this other stuff, and because they don't want the fans become the abbreviation for fanatic. Okay, so what happened was, they charged on Anul's house, and they were actually going to kill him, and he was able to fight them off, and this is where their council came, and then this is where Anul and Enki do not like each other at all. The two brothers, half-brothers, they fight each other. One is malevolent and one is benevolent. One rules by the sword or by the fist, and one actually tries to develop life and has a more of a benevolent approach to everything, and that is known as Inki. Okay, so just wanted to give you that. They had the fight, and then they came to Allah and said, okay, what we're going to do, we realize that we're going to take this burden from you, because they have been doing this for a very long time. And once they got here to Earth, they could never go back to their planet, because their bodies adjusted, and that they were going to experience a rapid deterioration of their physical bodies that they didn't have to do on their planet. So they were homesick, and not only that, they were becoming sick from being on this planet because of how close the Earth is to the sun, and their planet is far off. It's on a, some say it's on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit. There's nothing new under the sun, Solomon wrote about, and this was the planet, in my opinion, that he was talking about, because the Earth doesn't go under the sun. So just wanted to give you that basis real quick as to what happened. So this fight happened. They charged on Anul's house. He called for his brothers and the other Anunnaki council that were on the planet and off of the planet. They came and they decided, and Inki was the one. Anul wanted to deal with it with violence, to kill them all and get new people. But Inki wanted to do something different because he understood the laborious tension and the overall stress that they were being put under, and they weren't then being able to benefit from it all. And so this is where the two brothers start to really start to hate each other, and the father, Anul, sided with Inki and not Enlil, okay, the other brother. So we're going to pick up from there. Let's go.
The other Anunnaki females are involved in this as well. So, just like breeding experiments where you might end up with an impotency problem, they had that same problem. So, this is where Enki's son, Ningxia, came in and decided to study the genetics of these beings that they had created, this Adamu. And he noted that they needed an X and Y chromosome, the genetic material for reproduction. And so he did the gene splicing, fixed them up, and next thing you know, they're on their way up to Mesopotamia, back to the city of Eridu, which was Enki's city, recall, that he built with his 50 GG workers. And they decide to study these beings to see if they can procreate. And this is where your Garden of Eden story comes, where God, the God of the Old Testament, remember, well, now you'll realize Enki and Enlil were in the garden. And Enki was carrying the caduceus because that was his symbol, with the entwined snakes going around a pole. Right? We see this in the healthcare industry.
Yes, you see that in the healthcare industry to this day. That is actually the symbol of Enki whenever you see the caduceus that the doctors have. The thin entwining snakes that look like DNA and come to a head. There's so many emphasis from the Anunnaki that aren't really publicized because they don't want that story to get out. From the watch to, you know, the medical practice and all the medical practices, because Enki and his sister were critical in devising ways into using medical genetic splicing and DNA in manufacturing in cloning and everything else to actually develop a species of people, and they wanted to make the perfect slave. But you got to hear it all the way out, because Enki's influence is much more than what you think and what you've been told. This is just another story. You can do your own work to see how you feel about it. But what I would say, just don't go off something because you've only investigated one thing that your grandparents and everyone else has told you. Do some of your own research, and this is where you get an education. You can't really get an education. When you go to school, the only thing that you're taught is to regurgitate and to obey what they teach you. Okay? Get an education. If that comes from your own spiritual energy, reaching out into the library of the universe, and it providing for you. Why? Because it always comes with a open hand, while man has a closed fist for you at all times. So let's keep going. Here we go.
you see this in the healthcare industry.
Right, well, right, the DNA strand deal.
Well, this actually was indicative of the fact that he was a geneticist. Okay, so these were the double helix of the DNA that he was showing with an alchemical symbol as part of it that he probably wasn't disclosing all of it to his brother. Imagine he had the ability to go design some genetic being. His brother's the commander, and now they're going to be able to reproduce on their own, which would be a huge threat to his brother, especially since he contributed his own reproductive material to a bipedal hominid zygote that they in vitro fertilized in his half-sister.
Right.
Okay, so he's probably very suspicious of...
Now that you put it that way.
And he hasn't really, you know, like, okay, here's the genetic code and actually the sequencing, and he didn't disclose hardly anything, I'm sure. And, you know, he was apparently just brilliant. I mean, whether he should have done it or not, that's another matter, and we can talk about that later. But so, you know, so they show up in the garden to watch to see if they can procreate, and what does the animal say, the one playing God? He says, don't eat any of these. You can eat anything from the garden, but don't eat this one or you'll die. Right? Pretty severe. Well, this is Enki's garden, right, that Enel is in, so who is he to be telling them this in the first place? But anyway, then Enki shows up, the evil snake, right, who's in opposition to his brother. And by the way, you're going to find out sooner rather than later that these two did not get along. Enki was, his title means Lord of the Earth, and now his brother's there breathing down his neck playing commander. Imagine. And his title is Enlil, that means Lord of the Air. Right, so that's what their names mean. So they were trying to divide territory so they didn't step on each other, because these were powerful forces to be reckoned with, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Okay, so so at this point, the Adam and Eve couple are witnessed and eating this plant, whatever it was, from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, guess what? They became sentient and conscious of the fact that they weren't clothed, which was a symbolic gesture or allusion to higher consciousness. You know, they chose higher consciousness over not doing it at the fear of being killed over it, right? So they...
Okay, everyone, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. You're listening to Tando Radio Show. Can't call in today. We're doing this much earlier, but we will definitely talk about this and probably finish this up next week, so you could definitely, you know, write down some of the questions or comments that you may have at any time, and then if you would like to call in next week, because we're going to finish it up there, you can definitely do that at 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032 pound. Now we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to finish we're going to pick up where we left off. You're listening to the Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A. Now, this, and to me, this is, you know, up to you on what you want to have an open mind to and hear out, and then do some of your own investigation before. You know, it's very easy to hear something and say, and disregard it right away. Because, and I say that, you know, that is something that's very dangerous, and that's a habit, and it's a tactic of obedience. I would always say, you can hear everything, but that doesn't mean that you have to listen to anything. And once you, the reason why you would or wouldn't listen to something is because you vetted it out. Sometimes when you don't vet things out and you don't really look at things and you just come up with a opinion of something, it's just that. It's an opinion. And guess what? We can be extremely wrong on things because we didn't know. Opinion is that this one plant, if you eat it, will kill your physical body. And you say, no, it won't. It's too pretty, so I don't believe that. And you walk away. Why? Because you don't know. You didn't vet it or anything else. And then you eat it, or someone that you love eats it, and they end up dying because physically making a great transformation, physically dying or ending their physical existence because that actual plant killed them. And because just because you don't know something doesn't mean it's not factual. Just because you do know something doesn't mean that it is factual. This is why it's critical for us to be very keen in discerning investigators and thinkers. So I don't think that this should shake any of your, for those of you that are brought up in any religious fashion or spiritual fashion, this should not shake it at all. This, you know, if anything, just this is something else that you may need to actually investigate. Because I would say about the great creator, if you, one of the things that we try to do within what is done in religion is try to put the great creator in a bottle into form it into man, into man's image and man's likeness, because that is man's lie to control you. So let's go back to this and finish this out, and then next week definitely we can have a conversation, because we'll pick this up probably on Monday to finish it out. But today's show you won't be able to call in, just will be able to listen, because we're doing this much earlier because of scheduling conflicts. So let's go back to this. I'll pick it up where we were. So when we go to commercial break, I lose the spot. So here we go,
ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, and the medical officer's involved, and some of the other Anunnaki females are involved in this as well.
There we go.
That's pretty powerful.
Look what happened. They ate the plant, and they didn't die. So the first one lied to them, period. He lied. And the second one that told them they would wake up and become aware, well, that's exactly what happened. So the second one told them the truth and was demonized for it, right? He's an evil snake. What a bunch of crap.
Well, you always learn about the history from the victors.
Oh, exactly. Well, that's why the Sumerian tales are called mythology, or anything that's to be debased and made to be not important. You give it some label that de-elevates it from importance. You know, mythology.
Let me move this back a little bit so to make sure we didn't miss anything.
Well, that's what Sitchin did differently than others. He read this and assumed it wasn't a myth from. And tried to look at it from more of a scientific standpoint.
There we go. We're going to pick it up from here.
And so who is he to be telling them this in the first place? But anyway, then Enki shows up, the evil snake, right, who's in opposition to his brother. And by the way, you're going to find out sooner rather than later that these two did not get along. Enki was, his title means Lord of the Earth, and now his brother's there breathing down his neck playing commander. Imagine. And his title is Enlil. That means Lord of the Air. Right, so that's what their names mean. So they were trying to divide territory so they didn't step on each other, because these were powerful forces to be reckoned with, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Okay, so at this point, the Adam and Eve couple are witnessed and eating this plant, whatever it was, from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, guess what? They became sentient and conscious of the fact that they weren't clothed, which was a symbolic gesture or allusion to higher consciousness. You know, they chose higher consciousness over not doing it at the fear of being killed over it, right? So they were willing to die for higher consciousness, is essentially, whether they understood it or not, that's what they did.
That's
pretty powerful. Look what happened. They ate the plant and they didn't die. So the first one lied to them, period. He lied. And the second one that told them they would wake up and become aware, well, that's exactly what happened. So the second one told them the truth and was demonized for it, right? He's an evil snake. What a bunch of crap.
Well, you always learn about the history from the victors.
Oh, exactly. Well, that's why the Sumerian tales are called mythology, or anything that's to be debased and made to be not important. You give it some label that de-elevates it from importance. You know, it's just a myth. You know, well, that's what Sitchin did differently than others. He read this and assumed it wasn't a myth and tried to look at it from more of a scientific standpoint to figure out what was it they were saying and, you know, what capabilities they have. And, you know, so if you just read the Atrahasis, any person that reads this tablet and sees what they did to produce an offspring would realize that we can do that today. So why would you think they couldn't have done it then, especially if they apparently could travel from A to B from another planet and probably had a little more time to evolve than we did?
And that was one of the things that I had questioned, and I still question, as far as the official story of, you know, the Anunnaki coming to Earth to harvest gold. Now, obviously, everything breaks down to a certain frequency, and things break down to certain amounts of protons, neutrons, and electrons. And they've been able to produce small amounts of gold with, I think, lead or some other substance, but the amount of energy that it takes it's just not worth it. So if you're such an advanced race and you can live hundreds of thousands of years and travel the stars, I often wondered, well, why couldn't they just come up with a synthetic version on their own planet? You know, why do they have to go to Earth and then genetically modify the, you know, the Earth beings at that time? And then...
Okay, I want to stop it there real quick. A synthetic version. Synthetic version. Because gold in the precious metals, just like the universe, is absent of man's hand or any extraterrestrial biological entity's hand. It's made by the great creator and has intrinsic properties that sustain life. And they needed to, because of whatever the reasons that they had, because of the wars that they had on their planet and everything else, they too were like many of us here. And this, you can just imagine someone from another planet looking at us, and let's say we're a little more, way more advanced to them. What would we be teaching them? I would always say, when I was a kid, I remember I said, well, if they are, when I, you know, didn't, I was just, and I kind of knew as a child. When I was a child, I used to say, well, I wouldn't be afraid of aliens coming here. I would be afraid of what we would do to the aliens that would come. Just imagine if we had some aliens or some extraterrestrial biological entity that you fell upon on a planet, and you had 200, 300 people from Earth with you from all different parts of the world and country. What would be first thing, and they were benevolent, good living beings or entities, you would be concerned about the 199 people behind you, what they would be teaching them and what they would be doing to them from the historical nature of them in the past. Exact same thing here. So they weren't the creator. They had limited capability, even though it may have been more advanced than what we had. So let's go back, pick it up from there. Here we go.
And then I'm sure, have you heard of Credo Mutwa?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he talks about, you know, the mystery schools and secret teachings that he has been given from previous generations and then from previous generations. And he talks about how the original Earth people were so telepathic that if they were hungry, and they were all balanced perfectly, but as an example, I remember one thing he writes about was if woman or man, it was actually man and woman was one. There was no separation. So it was a being that was androgynous, I guess, or whatever. So essentially, it was so telepathic, though, that it would think to itself, I'm hungry, and an animal would come over, literally bow its head down, you know, to be lunch for that person or whatever. So, and then these beings came from space and offered the Earth people an opportunity to evolve, or they offered them like a, you know, some type of present or some ability, and they looked at them as like gods. And what they did was they changed them genetically. They offered them a chance to go to the right, or like to the blue mountain, it was called in these mystery schools, or the red mountain, I think, or something like that. So it just makes you wonder if that was the case, and if they did come here and they changed man to where after they came out of that, they didn't have that telepathic communication with Source anymore. It was just a much different environment. And he also talked about how they were confused because they used to be able to talk telepathically, but after that, they had to speak in words and they couldn't understand each other properly. And that's how war started, and confusion, and you know, just all these different scenarios of chaos, I guess. So do you think that there might be a possibility that when they came here and they did change the original Earth people, that it actually might have caused, you know, certain problems to take us away from Source?
Well, I think that's exactly what happened. Is you, when you read how Enki infused the energy from one of the beings who'd been sacrificed in creating this first avatar, first of all, I want to pin that term down right now. What we're talking about here is the creation of an avatar, right? This is a control of energy and matter that we truly don't have a grasp on yet. I know we want to understand how to take the consciousness, upload it to a computer, save it, and then put it in another host, but these guys apparently could do that. Yeah, that's amazing. So really, in general, at this point, if you found out that they did a genetic modification and you didn't know it, and you found out you were born as a slave, at that point you start asking yourself, well, what are the limits of the genetic constructs they gave us? How were we created? What's the template? You know? And a couple of them, they told us. They told us they gave us intelligence, and they also told us that they clamped our lifespan at 120 years. And this is also in the Bible, by the way.
Right.
It's in the Sumerian tablets. So, in my first book, I looked up to see if anybody had broken that 120-year age limit. And there was a couple people that had done it. One of them got to 122, but not much more than that. But that genetic clamp they put on us seemed pretty accurate. So this brings up a very, very deep question about how did they construct us? Were we only ever supposed to be the slaves in the Garden of Eden that Enlil wanted us? Keep them stupid, naked, dumb as animals, as long as they can do what we direct them to do, whether it's with words or the electromagnetic spectrum. And this is where it gets kind of crazy. They designed these beings because they had an uprising with the Ajiji in the first place. You think they didn't spend significant effort designing constructs into us so that they could monitor the intent to rebel or anything that smelled like that so they could put that out? So I'm telling you right now, if you start thinking scientifically from where they were probably at when they created us, they knew about the electromagnetic spectrum. They knew about photons, muons, and leptons, and they understood how a meat host operates in an energetic environment and how that all works. How you create an avatar is what I'm telling you. You think about that, that's crazy. They understood that. Well, so if that's the case, do you think they couldn't control you through frequency in some way to give you commands so that you do what you were supposed to do as a group, as an individual? Of course they could. So what you're saying is originally we could very well have been an advanced species, but that even possibly from another planet or the Atlanteans that they decided to enslave. And part of the DNA might have come from them, part of it might have come from a bipedal hominid, who knows? They were playing all kinds of chimera games. But I want you to think real hard about what our constraints are. Think about our five senses and how limited they are in frequency and sensitivity on the Earth compared to animals even. We really got clamped pretty hard is what I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, we do only see, I've brought this up before, about 0.01% of the electromagnetic light spectrum, then our brain filters out about 50% of that based upon our life experiences and the way that we think. So, I mean, there's a lot out there that we're not seeing and hearing and feeling, and just so many amazing senses. And some people have the opportunity to tap into their sixth sense because of maybe not only natural abilities, but their practical exercises, meditation, and things that they do. And so there's a lot of different things out there. And that brings me to the question, if they were able to control people via mind electronically back then, and you look at the way things are today, I've often discussed with people that have asked me questions like, well, you know, Rex, with as easy as it is for hackers out there to just, you know, to take over grids, and with the Stuxnet virus and so much bad in the world and so many crazy people, why isn't there somebody out there that's so disgruntled? Why don't they go do something that would actually have a big impact like you see in the movies, right? Because you never really see anything like that in real life. I mean, yeah, there's the occasional thing that happens, but nothing ever really that big. So why is that, I wonder, and they wonder. And I said, you know, it probably has something to do with there's like this blanket control of this electronic frequency or something that just keeps people that might be on the edge of snapping, you know, like maybe a disgruntled postal worker or veteran or something like that, or whatever. I'm being kind of sarcastic when I said the postal worker. I was joking around, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a very good point. Let's just get real specific. In the human brain, is there an organism that is sensitive to the electromagnetic frequency that could somehow be turned into a thought? That's the question, right?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, then the next question is anybody doing that to humans? And we find out there's plenty of evidence for the first one. If you dive deep into the brain, you'd see, and I discuss this in my first book, that you can essentially introduce a carrier wave with data on it, and it could be voice, it could be images, it could be whatever, just data, into the human brain without going through the auditory canal. And this is, you know, this really, I mean, it may be presented to the ear, but it may be done at a frequency that the ear can't hear. But when you mix these frequencies together, you can actually cause a resultant frequency that lands inside your brainwave region that could put an image or even a dialogue inside your head. And I think Jesse Ventura on his conspiracy show went up to meet some guy at the HARP facility in Alaska, some doctor who had a device to demonstrate this principle to him. But this is what I was describing in the book. So in general, if somebody can transmit in your brainwave region, and if the signal is higher than the one that you're generating, that one's going to dominate yours. So it's pretty simple. If it's in delta, theta, alpha, or beta of your brainwave segments, how we have them partition from about 0.5 hertz up to 20 to 60 hertz, depending on which literature you're looking at.
Right.
If you're transmitting in that region, and you play some games, you can directly control humans. So without getting too detailed into that, the reality is the electromagnetic spectrum and your meat host, essentially, the short answer is your interface to that electromagnetic spectrum is you're a meat modem. Not only do you receive energy from the electromagnetic spectrum and light and quantum energy and all kinds of things, magnetism, gravity, but you also are transmitting. So every thought that you have, that you formulate, ends up as a signal that can be monitored in the brain. Well, any electrical signal, for anybody who knows this, travels through infinite space. So that signal doesn't just stop just because it's bouncing around your head. You're transmitting it through the electromagnetic spectrum. And if someone had the technology, they could aim a device at your head with a low noise amplifier and take that brainwave thought and convert it into the symbols or whatever bidirectional memory model that they have set up for humans, which, by the way, we do have. So we know how that works. So the end result of all that is you were designed in a way where everything that you think is transmitted, I mean, even the telemetry of your body can be received remotely, heart rate, respiratory rate, everything. Okay, so when the Bible says that, quote unquote, God knows the number of hairs on your head, well, if they know about your genetics, they can determine that, right? So
Right.
I want you to think about that. Nothing you've ever said, done, or seen is a secret. You were designed as a telemetry host to be dropped into remote situations and planets and be their avatar agent. And nothing has changed. Nothing.
Yeah, let me jump in real quick, Gerald, because you're bringing up some really cool topics here. And have you ever personally, before you discovered all this, just wondered those kind of questions like, man, am I looking at stuff and is this being somehow recorded into the Akashic records or for some future race or entity or somebody to be able to tap into? Or that's pretty incredible.
Well, I had the experience. I felt like it was happening by
right,
now.
Yeah.
I think it happens to a lot of authors, actually. It's a crazy experience, but yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. I just wanted to bring that up.
Quick, I want to just chime in real quick. There has also been plans that were actually devised by using imagery and using frequencies to actually deceive the general public of different beings coming to this planet by deception. So this is technology, and these are tactics that have been talked about, and this goes back years. So all of this is relatively relevant. So we're going to pick up here. So I just wanted to make that point. This is nothing new. There was actually a warning that a famous, I can't remember it right now, but it's a famous scientist that told his daughter, be careful when they start to talk about finding different civilizations on different planets, and they're going to saying that they are malevolent, when it really is the overall government that you have now that is just using a different tactic. And one of the things that he said, be careful when they start to use holograms. Think about that. Very, very critical. So let's go back.
Just wanted to bring that up.
Well, you know, I think about this. Since the 60s, our three-letter agencies have had the ability to read a license plate from space.
Yeah.
And demodulate brainwaves. So they've been able to read your brainwaves and decode them since the 60s.
Sure. I mean, absolutely.
So think about yourself as a human antenna and a transmitter. So whatever energy is going on in your body, they can sense that too, whether it's first chakra all the way up to seventh chakra, which one's working, which one isn't. Brainwave activity, is your corpus callosum allowing lateral ventricle fluid bidirectionally go across? How awake is this being is what I'm telling you. So they can read your intent just from your energy body and your thoughts. Now think about this, if these Anunnaki built these replacement workers and they didn't want any revolts again, that would make sense that they would have that kind of snooping ability onto our meat host, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And if they could just track it at any time and have algorithms, so if some particular, you know, being over there wasn't following orders or was starting to think about getting other ones together and saying, hey, let's revolt, well, these algorithms pick that up and then they can immediately swarm over there and they can
take out
the subject.
Pre-crime, just like in Minority Report. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's how bad the enslavement is. So I don't want to spend too much more time on that. But couple other corroborating events I usually throw in, because people start from the Bible, believe it's the true word of God, and there's a lot of truth in the Bible, don't get me wrong, but you need to understand who God is. So let's there's thousands of names for God.
Let me ask one question if I can real quick before we move on to the next thing, and it's about the it's about the chakras, because I've heard before that they were they're kind of like a bad thing. I've heard that it can be good, I've heard that it can be bad. But one person in particular, George Kavassalis, he's a nice guy. I talked to him several years ago. He's supposedly made contact with many different interstellar and extra-dimensional races, and he talked about the chakras and how they were basically implanted from ETs, you know, when we were created to be kind of like a control source. Is there any truth to that?
Well, it depends. You know, it's always like how you use technology. Why would they put in I'll just call it quantized sequence of nerve ganglia that they call these chakras? By the way, each one has a different wavelength of light that it seems to resonate.
Okay.
Which is very interesting, and these are parameters we can measure. So why would think about this. So why would Enki create a being and augment it possibly with some latent DNA that could be triggered at some future point in time or under some circumstance that he designed, who knows, whether it's going through the galactic center or showing certain symbols that trigger this in the being, right? Well, this seems like that's partly true as we start to study our quote-unquote junk DNA. So why would he do this? What agenda did he have with his brother such that he felt like these beings shouldn't just be dumbed-down slaves that get driven to death at mining and dredging rivers and building buildings? What if he was a little more benevolent than that, and he decided that I'm going to put the constructs in them to allow them to evolve spiritually and physically to the same place we are over some period of time, under some circumstances, and I'll be in control of the catalysts that allow them iteratively more consciousness. And by the way, that correlates exactly with the Mayan calendar. If you look at the Zolkin calendar, you know, they talked about these nine stages and the frequency dispensations that cause different life forms. Well, Timothy Leary wrote a lot about these circuits, and when you look at them, it looks like there's eight of them in a human that correspond to the stages we go through in our life of waking up. So as far as the chakras, so why would he put into a construct within us to allow us to take on more and more consciousness until we achieve, you know, this highest level that can be measured, by the way, with lots of different kind of imaging equipment now? Why would he do that? Because he didn't want us to be enslaved forever. He knew, I think, in his heart, that at some point in the future, that slavery was going to be cast off, that they couldn't be controlled, because he had created them to slowly turn into the Anunnaki. As a matter of fact, that he says that in some of his writings, you know, we have become them. We may not be as big as they are, and we may have clamps on our DNA, but it's possible that those clamps could be taken off energetically in one fell swoop. Who knows? Right? Change of a brainwave frequency that goes into your brain that, you know, is modulated this particular way, and it unlocks some genetic trigger. Who knows for sure, right?
Right.
In a twinkling of an eye, just wanted to throw that in real quick. Listen, we're going to go to a commercial break real quick. Hopefully you're actually learning something and you have an open mind to this, and then start to actually look at things from your standpoint and be the creator that you are, because the great creator, and I'm saying not the from the standpoint of Inky as the great creator. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm actually saying that their greatest creator gives and never has and never takes with a fist, comes with an open hand, because you're no threat. Actually, there's sustainability and love that's the most important thing. So you may go to a commercial break. Hopefully you're learning a lot. And when we come back, we'll finish this out. And we're definitely, I can already feel the phone call from different people at different times. But don't call in today, because we're not having a live show at a regular scheduled time today. But we will bring this back up on Monday, because I doubt that we'll have a show tomorrow. But if we do, we'll let you know. And we will definitely finish this out then. And you can call in there from hearing this, and then come up with some of your questions and comments from this. So you listen to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, the new black media for the new millennium.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We're going to jump right back into the actual video that we're listening to. We don't have a live show today. We're actually taping this morning, but we will pick this up next week. And definitely you can have, we'll have a live show there where you can have some questions and comments. As usual, call us at 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032#. But do that on Monday. Not sure if we're going to have a show on Friday. Okay, but if we do have a show on Friday, I doubt it will be about this. If anything, we'll definitely have our brother Bragg doing some very critical things. And this all ties into a lot of the things that we've been talking about on Tando Radio Show in so many ways. So let's get back to the overall. Here we go, the video. Sorry about this.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this edition of...
Here it is.
Lots of different kind of imaging equipment now. Why would he do that? Because he didn't want us to be enslaved forever. He knew, I think, in his heart, that at some point in the future, that slavery was going to be cast off, that they couldn't be controlled, because he had created them to slowly turn into the Anunnaki. As a matter of fact, he says that in some of his writings. You know, we have become them. We may not be as big as they are, and we may have clamps on our DNA, but it's possible that those clamps could be taken off energetically in one fell swoop. Who knows? Right? Change of a brainwave frequency that goes into your brain that, you know, is modulated this particular way, and it unlocks some genetic trigger. Who knows for sure? Right?
Right.
So that's very... So I think he was at odds with Enlil over... access to higher consciousness, and this is really the real battle for humans all through history, is how do we get to the truth about where we came from, where we're going, because if you had all that, you wouldn't be susceptible to all the BS and the lies. But so Enki seemed to be the same persona as Prometheus, in that he gave life to us, but and also was benevolent to us to the best that he could without getting walked all over by those who didn't want him to.
Okay, and then...
Go ahead. Well, so, this brings up the whole Noah story that people talk about. And we can do that one, which I've done so many times. I'd actually like to skip that one and actually go to the real source of what caused my head to spin around when I was looking at this data. And that was the Lamentations, the documents that were found in the city of Ur. Now, you have to understand, the Anunnaki had several cities before the last big flood, Noah's flood, if you will, and they had cities before that as well. And the last flood, I think, was approximately 12,000 years ago. That's what all the records seem to indicate. And it also corresponds with the DNA samples of the ewes. And so Enlil was the chief deity of the city of Ur. Now, so there was Ur and Nippur and Eridu, like I told you, was the very first city, and Bad Tabira and Sippar and Nineveh, several of them, okay? Well, he was the chief deity of the city of Ur, or Nippur, but he also had a presence in the city of Ur, which was very important to them. This was kind of a, you know, Ur Nippur was like their mission control center, okay? This was where they can, and Enlil was totally about that place. That was his. Remember I told you, they drew lots in the beginning.
Right.
And he got that territory, so that was his. Okay, so as you're reading into these documents, realizing that the progenitor of all three world's religions came from that city, okay? And his name was Abram before he got renamed, right? And he had a brother named Haran, and they had a nephew named Lot, right? So you know about that story. Well, all of a sudden you realize that Abram's father, Terah, was serving this deity in the Ziggurat Temple at Ur, who was none other than Enlil. There wasn't anybody else there. It was his territory, remember? So all of a sudden you realize out of this area that Abram became the patriarchal figure for Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Well, you ask yourself why? You know, why was this being from whose father was serving as the chief priest of Enlil, who, by the way, was also called Yahweh? So all of a sudden, now you come into the canonical Bible realizing who this being was and where he's from, and you go, wow, this is the source of it all, right here. He was also known as El Shaddai and several other names. Jehovah, okay? Those were names for Enlil. And all of a sudden you go, oh, OMG, right? This is the one that was calling himself God in the Garden of Eden in the city of Eridu. So all of a sudden, the veil is lifted. Do you see it?
Enlil is basically... So how did you get that connection with all the different names that you just brought up? Like
well, I had to do a genealogy table to keep track of all these crazy names. And I have it on my website for sale. I actually ended up doing a vinyl scroll. It's about 3 feet by 8 foot tall, with all the names on there, so you can follow these through, okay? But all I had to do was see Enlil's name. Oh, and by the way, his son Allah, Nanarsin was another name for him, was the king of that city in the Second Dynasty. So now all of a sudden you realize the rebel down in the damn mines was his kid. You think he's going to be kind to his kid for what he did, causing a disruption in the gold mining processing milestones that his dad, Anu, was probably very concerned about? So, all of a sudden, these major names are falling out in religion. Let's just do those now. So, Enlil is Yahweh. He's the one that's portrayed as God in the Old Testament. He's the one that tells the Levites to go kill each other with a sword, right in Exodus 32:20, okay? The same God of wrath and vengeance. Well, guess what? There's a Lamentation of Ur in my second book where he blows up the city of Ur while Nanar, who's Allah, and his wife were in the city. They barely escaped. Apparently, Nanar was injured. So now you're starting to find out the real story of who these beings were. Okay, so Jesus, and who was Enki? What role was he playing? Now that you found out that Enlil was playing the god role and Enki was portrayed as this evil snake, well, now you said you realize those roles are just the opposite. Just the opposite. How do we know this? Enlil went on a tirade to get rid of the humans about 600 years after that primitive worker experiment, if you read the Atrahasis and read it closely. Not only did he introduce communicable diseases that killed people twice, cut off the food and the water supply, but that's when he ordered the flood by his brother, Lord of the Seas. He got, instead of the Lord of the Earth, he got disambiguated with his brother and he got assigned the oceans. Well, where does that ring a bell? Now we know that Enlil, while we're doing the names, was Zeus. Okay, we know this without question. And Enki, his brother and nemesis, was Poseidon, the chief deity of Atlantis. These names start to fill in the blanks for you now. Now we got Allah, we got who supposedly God or Jehovah was. And now all of a sudden you find out that the one who actually did the genetic experiment to create us was none other than Enki and his half-sister, who was Isis. Well, she had other names all through many cultures as well.
You know, another thing too is I'm thinking about the Old Testament talking about, people living 800 years, 900 years, and then after the flood, it's 120 years. So was that also because of a rebellion or something like that? So they decided to kind of, I guess you could say nip it in the bud?
Well, you're referring to the genealogy table in Genesis from Adam to Noah.
Mm-hmm.
And in that account, several beings lived up to 800-900 years. And I think Methuselah lived up to 960-something years. He was the oldest. Well, those ages are incredible, but if you look back to the Sumerian kings list, we have just a couple before the flood and then after the flood. And before the flood, it's quite amazing. If you look at their rulerships and the cities they were in this area in southern Iraq and that area, okay, it was quite amazing. The first one was given the kingship of the first city that Enki built in the Sumerian kings list, and that was the city Eridu, and his name was Alulim. They name him, and they name how long he ruled that city. Like I said, he ruled it for 8 shars. Well, a shar to them is 3,600 earth years, so that's 28,800 years that Berossus wrote down in that Sumerian kings list for the very first one. Is that incredible or what?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you can keep going. You can keep going down that list and see that one of them served 12 shars, this is not how long they lived. This is how long they served. So now all of a sudden these lives from Adam to Noah don't look so long.
I mean, how long do they live? Is there a place that you've ever been able to find out that states it?
Well, it seems to depend on the circumstances they're in. The Earth was a foreign territory for them, and it caused what they called rapid aging to their bodies, and they had to do something about that. And that's where the medical officer came in to deal with the decaying of the telomeres in the DNA. These are the little end caps that, when the cell replicates, that if it doesn't shorten, then the cell is okay. If it gets some damage through the end caps, then this is what shows up as aging in our bodies. Okay, so this was reported by them, and their medical officer set about to do something about that. Well, imagine originally their DNA was such that it didn't decay, and they could live forever as long as they, did certain things energetically to revitalize themselves, like a battery, if you will. And this has been reported in several of their writings that even the Greek considered their gods immortal, right? Well, maybe it was just they lived so much longer than them that they couldn't verify how long they lived.
Let me jump in real quick, Wendy, because you brought up the Greeks. They kind of, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't the overall theology of the Greek gods is they are immortal, but they don't really have a soul, and that's why they're upset with humans, because humans are soul, because they do have a soul?
I've never heard that. I do believe that if you look at the Anunnaki Council of 12, and I put this in my first book, I call it the God Table, okay? Well, if all of a sudden you realize that Enlil was playing the role of Jehovah in the Old Testament, God Yahweh, and you lay this table out in the various cultures that they were exposed to, if they lived a long time, they didn't have just one culture or civilization that they were exposed to. And we see this through all the ancient civilizations. When you start really looking into it, you can come up with a God table that significantly portrays these main Anunnaki players as the gods of that culture. That's true in India. It's true in the Viking tradition. It was true in the Armenian gods when I went and looked at those, and it was also true in Asia. So when you really look, and it was true in Ireland too. So when you start looking at who these beings were and living a long time, they were also venerated in various cultures too. So that's how. You know, let's just follow one of them through, for instance. Let's just follow this being named Sheeta, who was the geneticist that I told you about. Well, in the Enuma Elish, he's discussed in there being affiliated with the planet Mercury. Okay, so he was also called Mercury in Rome. Well, he was called Hermes in Greece. Right? Well, he was called Ningishita in the Sumerian documents, okay, as Enki's premier son, who was pretty damn amazing. As a matter of fact, as Thoth in Egypt, he introduced the calendar and writing to the people.
Yeah. Who is Thoth? That credible character.
Well, now you realize he is a high-level Anunnaki being who, according to their records, when he escorted the first human that was created, the Adapa, to meet Anu back on Nibiru, he escorted him along with one of Enki's other kids. Well, he kind of got a mission after that he was to be kind of the head of this priesthood to facilitate the spiritual path of humans. And when you read this, you go, wow, what else did they predicate from Nibiru, which they called heaven, by the way? What else did they predicate in our path so we know what we're up against? You know? And so Thoth Ningshida is a very, very important character in this whole thing. And he's an Enki. We kind of delineate between the offspring of Enki and Enlil because they were so opposed to each other. I call them the Hatfields and the McCoys. But Ningshida was so important. He actually also has been credited with writings, massive numbers of writings, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Book of Thoth. According to the Emerald Tablets, he was the author of those as well, which he was called Thoth the Atlantean, and then came over to Egypt to establish everything that he did. Well, now you realize that Africa was given to Enki, and it would make sense that his son would be there doing what he did. So all these mystery schools to wake people up that Thoth built coincide with this kind of rival over higher consciousness that the Enlilites didn't want. You can think of these as the New World Order.
stop there real quick, just to give a some and what Clark is doing. I've actually researched in some of the things that I found. This is why you have the more benevolent side of culture that came out of Africa, because from just looking from my studies of the precious metals and everything else, and then by being introduced to the Anunnakis and everything else, when Enki was key, because the Enkianites are more benevolent in culture. They're not as warring. They're more asymmetrical and benevolent than Enlil and his class, that is more warring and does that and rule of, to enslave with a fist, instead of the Enkianites that were more about having a spiritual existence. Totally, totally different. And it was also from there you can see from the Dogons and from the different ancient cultures of Africa. The Greeks stole many of their little g gods from Africa, and actually from when man was created, there was gold in their skin. And this is, if you know what gold does to the sun, it prevents the aging process. This is one of the reasons why they say black don't crack. This is, you know, part of the Enkianites. And this is just what the Sumerians and what my research with the precious metals has led, and this was the overall a situation that was presented. And it's so funny, you know, now am I saying that this is absolutely true? That's up for you to decide. It really doesn't matter what I decide. But I know one thing is that when you look at these writings and you look at this writing, you look at the writings that, you know, let's say it's hard to say that one writing is more valid than the other when you're using a writing to substantiate and validate everything. So it comes to a point where it has to become more spiritual. And that's what I decided to do in discerning with things. And I realized something by the way that you as an actually resonate as a person. It's easy to see, are you, from this standpoint, if you're going to use that overall measure, you can see the Enkianites and the Enlil and those that follow Enlil very easy and quickly. You can discern it quickly. So, just wanted to make that point. Let's go back in the last 10 minutes.
World order, let's steal all their sovereignty and their rights and just make them good slaves, versus beings who are on a spiritual path that should be allowed to access all the constructs that, you know, they're in, have a right to from... Oh,
let me move
this
back. Let me move this back a little bit, because I didn't want to talk and mess that up. Here we go. All right, here we go.
The Atlantean, and then came over to Egypt to establish everything that he did. Well, now you realize that Africa was given to Enki, and it would make sense that his son would be there doing what he did. So all these mystery schools to wake people up that Thoth built coincide with this kind of rival over higher consciousness that the Enlilites didn't want. You can think of these as the New World Order, let's steal all their sovereignty and their rights and just make them good slaves, versus beings who are on a spiritual path that should be allowed to access all the constructs that, you know, they're in, have a right to from... Oh, and this is what I wanted to talk about here. So at this point, you have to ask yourself, well, if the Anunnaki did really do all this and create us, then who created them? You know, how do they fit into this whole picture? You know, does that that ought to come to your mind after a while? You'll realize that. But
oh, of course.
In their writings, Enki in particular mentioned one of their emissaries whose name was Galzu, who brought them messages back and forth from Nibiru, and he talked about having an encounter with a being they called the Creator of All, who basically we would truly call God, you know, the source creator of all, or the infinite source, or whatever you want to call it. Well, they said they had an encounter with that being, and it turns out in the Emerald Tablets, Thoth calls him the creator of all, just as Enki does in his writings. So it's interesting that they chose that title. And in Thoth's writings, in my second book, he talks a lot about the constructs of a human. So, you know, we're looking for the manual, in essence. How were humans created in this crazy genetic experiment? What are the rules for this game? And is there a way out of this enslavement? Because everybody can probably take a detached perspective and look around the planet and see that the idea of freedom is kind of a farce.
Oh, really? I mean, just because it's like the land of the free. You know, it's funny because we do have a lot of really cool, I mean, advantages over some people in other countries, and I think it could be a lot better. I mean, certainly it's gotten to the point to where more people per capita, I think, are locked up in America than any other nation in the world. So yet it's the land of the free, which is quite odd. But you know, the thing about what you're talking about right now is, I find it fascinating, because if this is really the history of our mankind, and if this wasn't, you know, tabloids written several thousand years ago, because this is one thing that I've talked to people about before as well, even if it's 10,000 years old, if the writings are 20,000 years old, if they're cave paintings that are 100,000 years old, it doesn't necessarily mean one is truer or more accurate than the other. However, because there is so much out there in different writings and texts that kind of correlate with each other from different parts of the world, then you can say, yeah, that's incredible. And one thing I wanted to talk to you about was the Emerald Tablets and Thoth again for a minute, because I've always been fascinated with those writings. Do you think so you do feel that those are legit and that wasn't just written by a very smart, eclectic...
You know, I've gone back and forth with this, and just like Sitchin's work, and ultimately for all of us, it's true. You've got to expose yourself to the knowledge and go through a process of determining what's true and what resonates with you. And usually it turns out to be an internal feeling that's unique to you, that something could be true to you and not true to somebody else. So it may not be meant for your path, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So that being said, I read it the first time, and I found it pretty wild. And then I, for some reason, something stuck in there with me. If you applied some of the scientific thinking that we have now, that we didn't have in 1925, by the way. I mean, the idea of parallel dimensions and this model in the Emerald Tablets fits perfectly with string theory. I mean, my goodness, the concept of an avatar, the ideas of differentiating energy and matter to the distinguished level that he talks about. Some of these things that end up in the Emerald Tablets, the idea of using a power that you started to allude to earlier, of this supposed ability to manifest matter out of thin air. Well, apparently this shows up in the Emerald Tablets as well. So we're like, okay, is this all just myth-making, or was this true? And I went through this as well, and I had probably read them 100 times. And each time I would find corroborating evidence that couldn't possibly have been known by somebody at that time, unless they were very, very advanced. And my wife, Kristen, and I were just talking about that today, because there's naysayers on everything that comes out, you know. So you always feel like you're in a political campaign with people throwing you barbs and everything else. But ultimately, if you can find corroboration-level learning and evidence that's convincing for you, I don't think you can do any better than that. So for me, and I've read a lot of Thoth's writings, a lot of the writings in there coincide with the same character of this being that I've read in other sources. So for me, I believe they are true.
You know, and another thing too is I'm just right now even looking at 10 amazing structures that were built who knows how long ago. The first one is...
All right, everyone, I'm going to hold it off there. Hopefully you were introduced to something maybe that you weren't never introduced before, and then that you can start off on a different investigative journey of the great eternity that I think that we all live in. It's something that is really encouraging, because when we look at our free will, you can decide what your eternity, how your eternity is going to be occupied, and how your eternity is going to be spent into great powerful things. Some people resonate on a low frequency, some people resonate on a high frequency. But I truly do think that those that try to interject their freedom or their free will on someone else's is a real problem. And that is what we have violent contention with. But it's a beautiful, beautiful eternity that we all have. And this is just some of the things that wouldn't you really want to have an experience with, to find out, or to develop. I no longer look at what's right or wrong, because I could be right or I could be wrong. One of the things that I try to resonate in, and I'm going to end the show on this, is if it's healthy for me. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the great spirit that taught me that. Much love and much respect. We're going to end today's show, God willing. We will talk to you all soon. It's never goodbye. As always, I'll see you later. And we will pick up. I'm not quite sure if we'll have a show tomorrow. We'll let you know. And remember, before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give a good fortune away before. Much love, much respect. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up.